Now, stay tuned for the second hour of the Dr. and Mrs. Future show right here on KSCO.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. Ladies and gentlemen, KSCO presents the Dr. Future Show. If you would like to join in our show today, you can call us at 831-479-1080. That's 831-479-1080. And now, your host, Dr. Future.
Good afternoon, folks. Good afternoon again, Mrs. Future.
Hello.
Good afternoon, Bobby in San Francisco.
Hello.
Hey. Yes. For the next segment, we're going to be speaking to Dr. Michael Arnold. Dr. Arnold was, until recently, a private practice physician in Monterey, recently retired. After he retired, he moved to our area in Aptos, in this area, and was very involved with writing a book on eye re-education, on a nice medical book on how to re-educate your eyes to see better through exercise. We talked about that a few weeks ago. And as a private physician, he could not help but pay attention to all this COVID stuff that's coming down in mainstream media and the absolute overwhelming push to get the vaccine. And that's the only answer to COVID.
Could we call it the experimental vaccine?
Experimental vaccine, yeah. Well, multiple vaccines, right? Mm-hmm. And when you hear about vaccine hesitancy in the news, you hear, oh, those people are uneducated. They don't really know what they're talking about.
Those people are targets for being defamed because they don't agree with the mainstream agenda.
Are there religious fanatics or everything to discredit anything but the vaccine? And naturally, we look at this. It looks very suspicious to me. It looks to me like Big Pharma is having its way with us. I'll put it that way.
It's a big advertising campaign.
Yeah, big money grab. And to provide a different perspective, we bring in Dr. Arnold to talk about his approach to understanding the COVID and alternatives to treating it if you do get it.
Yeah, and I would just like to point out that on the DrFutureShow.com links page, you can download some very well-researched information about the different stages of the expression of the disease caused by
SARS-CoV-2.
Yes, and you can also understand which stages require various medical analyses and interventions, and you can also understand some of the doctor's points of view about that.
Okay, so, without any further ado, Dr. Arnold, are you there?
I am here.
Okay, very good. So, paying attention to what's going on, it concerned you a little bit, made you want to take some action. Can you tell us what you've been doing about the COVID crisis?
Gladly. You know, at the beginning of the COVID crisis, I began following the situation and things didn't add up. Mm. I sort of got drawn in to looking further and further. I'm like, that doesn't make sense. That doesn't make sense. Wait a minute. That doesn't make sense either. And what I realized is that the COVID epidemic is exaggerated, and I couldn't tell you how much. Mm. And that it's not only a money grab by Big Pharma, but it's a power grab, and don't ask me by who. Those are the main factors. And just to give you a little background, this dreaded coronavirus is the third most common cause of the common cold as a family. Now, that's not to say that this particular strain of coronavirus isn't more pathogenic, but it's certainly not pathogenic to the extent that the mainstream media would have you believe.
Mm, like influenza is a coronavirus?
No, sorry, it's not. No. Influenza is not. But
there are four common colds.
Four common colds, okay. And some of them are coronaviruses.
Of the four common ones, they're all coronaviruses. There's other colds, but there are four coronavirus colds.
I see. So influenza is another thing entirely.
Yeah.
Another virus.
Yeah. Okay.
So the next thing I noticed is that people were being censored. Mm. And as a citizen of the United States and believer in free speech, it's one thing to disagree with someone. It's another to erase them.
To muzzle them, huh?
To muzzle them, yes. And fortunately, that erasing is just on a digital level. But nevertheless, it's still very concerning. And, you know, talk about immune system. If your immune system, your political immune system is not activated by the fact that knowledgeable experts such as doctors and PhDs in the area of virology and research scientists and clinicians with 40 years of experience are being muzzled because of their opinion, then you definitely have political immune deficiency. But I'm a doctor. I can't really speak to politics. But what I noticed is that any alternative to vaccines since the beginning of this has been systematically silenced. And that, to me, is not right. And then finally, just yesterday, I think, day before, I went on the CDC website to check it again. And if you look on the CDC website, what should I do if I get COVID? It says there's no treatment for COVID. Just stay home, drink lots of water, maybe take some ibuprofen or Tylenol, and go to the emergency room if things get bad. Okay? So it's my medical opinion as a clinician of 40 years, as a medical doctor with 3 postgraduate degrees, that there are things that you can do for COVID that can lessen the impact and potentially at least take you out of danger.
I mean, like vitamin C and D?
Absolutely. So, you know, a very simple core regimen would be vitamin C, vitamin D, zinc, and a supplement called quercetin. And there's good studies that show that people, it's very unusual for someone to get bad COVID if they're not deficient in vitamin D. If you have enough vitamin D, you're unlikely to get bad COVID.
And that comes from the sun. So getting lots of sunshine is one way to do that. A supplementation is another. Huh?
Yes, yes. So what really triggered me to write this manual, which is only about 65 pages, and is available free to everybody on my website and on the Dr. Future website. You have to understand, in medicine, there's a hierarchy, right?
Sure.
When you get a guy who's an internal medicine doctor, okay, that's 3 years of after being a doctor, you still train some more. And then he's an ICU specialist, an intensive care unit specialist. That's another couple of years. And then he's a pulmonologist, so that's another couple of years. Right?
Yeah.
So, and he's teaching at a medical school. So when you get a guy like that who goes in front of a Senate panel and says, this is my medical opinion, and a United States senator sits there listening to it, and that video is put up on YouTube and is taken down by YouTube, okay, we got a problem.
Yeah, because of his perspective. Yeah. And we'll get into that perspective in a moment. We got to go to a commercial break. We'll be right back with Dr. Michael Arnold talking about alternatives to the vaccine. We'll be right back. Okay, welcome back to the show. We're talking to Dr. Michael Arnold about other ways of treating COVID and about how a prominent physician who brought up an alternative approach was literally just taken off of YouTube talking to his center.
The public airwaves do not belong to the public anymore.
How can anyone have that kind of power to do that? It's amazing. Anyway, can you tell us essentially what's being censored and what can we do about it? Or what should we do about it?
A good question. So basically, any potential treatment for COVID is being censored. And I can tell you why, because if there is a treatment for COVID that is already FDA approved, such as hydroxychloroquine or ivermectin, or just alternative treatments by perfectly legal, say, herbs, right?
Mm-hmm. And the way that they used to treat colds before this weird time in history.
Exactly. If any treatment exists, then the emergency use authorization does not apply, and the vaccine companies have to go through the full safety vetting of their vaccine.
You mean, wait a minute. You're saying that if ivermectin is officially approved by the FDA, then they couldn't use these emergency vaccines?
Not for the treatment of COVID-19. They could use them for testing. They could still get volunteers, right? But they couldn't use them as treatment.
Exactly. And they certainly couldn't impose them on people by a wide spectrum of pressure, from advertising to excluding people from flying to, I had a friend who went in a restaurant and they said, have you had the vaccine? If not, you have to sit in the corner over there.
Yeah. Yeah. Second rate citizen. Huh?
Right. Yeah. Well, it was very interesting listening to Jim Psaki today saying that the federal government is not going to make any mandates. However, they're encouraging private businesses to come up with ways of rewarding people who go along with the program.
Yeah.
It's kind of fascist, right?
In my world, and actually in Israel, I read an article. In Israel, they really, it's really intense if you won't take the vaccine. Some people are suing in the international court in Nuremberg, saying that this violates the international law against doing an experimental procedure on a human without their consent.
Are you aware that there are teachers in Los Angeles who are suing because of forced vaccination mandates in order for them to teach?
I didn't know that, and I'm glad to know it, because we really, you know, on the political level, I feel we really need to stand up and say, hey, we're not swallowing this, we're not buying it.
What percentage of doctors are standing up at this point?
In my awareness, I would say maybe 5%, 3%.
Really?
Doctors are some of the most orthodox people in society.
Hmm.
And the potential blowback for a doctor is much greater than just for a non-doctor, because the medical board can just come and start investigating them. And maybe they don't say, well, you violated something by being for ivermectin, for example. But they can come and say, oh, your paperwork's not quite right. I can really mess you up, you know?
Sure. Yeah. Dr. Simone Gold, she lost her job because of preferring to recommend hydroxychloroquine. And she had to go out and instead get a job being a public advocate and starting the frontline doctors.
Yes. Yes, exactly. Yeah. So that's on the political level. But on the personal level, I feel that it is a mistake to take the vaccines.
Mm-hmm. A mistake. Not meaning, so you wouldn't say these alternatives are as good as what we're hearing about the vaccines in terms of treatment?
It's interesting. In the time since the COVID epidemic started, I spent hundreds of hours in research, and I have completely lost confidence in the medical literature.
Why?
At the beginning of the COVID epidemic, I knew that there had already been instances that were increasing in frequency where research results were falsified to fulfill the financial agenda of whoever was backing that research. And I had friends I spoke with in the research industry and in the pharmaceutical industry who said unabashedly, that's exactly right. Basically, they say, hey, we need this result because otherwise we won't make any money here.
Hmm.
So I was shocked. And if you'd like some terrifically, wonderfully gory details about that, you can watch the movie Vax, V-A-X-X-E-D.
Yes. Yeah,
where
yes,
the CDC manipulates the vaccine safety data, and it's very well documented. And they have footage of a Senate hearing where the guy asked the head of the CDC, this is on the allegation that childhood vaccines cause autism. He said, did you compare the frequency of autism in the vaccinated children against a group of children who had not been vaccinated? So that's like the first thing any scientist would do, right?
Sure.
And after a little bit of tap dancing and mumbling and fumbling, the head of the CDC said, no, we did not.
Oh, and I have to add to that when I did some research recently, there is a pending Supreme Court case which alleges that the majority of vaccination testing has not been done in a proven safety and efficacy manner. There are almost no vaccines that have been tested in a double-blind study involving non-vaccinated people and vaccinated people. Most vaccination testing is one vaccine against another vaccine. And there's a Supreme Court case asking to review that fact that has just been put on hold. It's just collecting dust.
So are you an anti-vaxxer?
My position is I think that vaccines have a place.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they have been massively overused, and that has caused problems in the immune system, which accounts at least in part for the incredible rise in the rate of cancer and in the rate of autoimmune disease. So let's use them judiciously.
Mm-hmm. It's overly used as a tool in the medical toolbox.
Exactly. And that brings harm, basically. That brings harm.
Well, and what about the issue of vaccinating healthy people?
Well, there's some interesting issues there. First of all, no one is at risk from COVID if they're healthy. the death rate, if you're healthy, is like probably about the death rate that if you ride a bicycle. Oh, my God, somebody died on a bicycle. Well, yeah. We have to impound all the bicycles.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, it's the comorbidities that I think that they've been pointing out, which exactly. So many Americans have, though.
Yes, we're a nation in very poor health. And the fact is that with your health that poor, and we learned this from the HIV epidemic, that's called immunodeficiency, right? Mm-hmm. If your blood sugar is high, if you have diabetes, your immune system can't work. Your immune cells are like slugging through syrup. They're like, how are we supposed to do our job, you know?
Yeah.
And there's many other things like that. That impair the function of the immune system. And so it's not that the coronavirus is going to come and kill everybody like the plague, where they, you know, that's one thing I noticed. Gee, in the plague, they were dragging the bodies out in the streets. They were dying so fast.
Yes.
I'm walking around my neighborhood, and yeah. I'm like, gee, I don't see any bodies out in the streets.
But, bring out your dead. Bring out your dead.
You know, and at the other extreme, if yeah. the immunodeficiency is enough, something's going to come and take you away. No yeah. matter how weak that germ or virus is. So what we're really seeing is the almost harvesting of the people in severely bad health. Mm. And that's another thing. You kind of got me ranting, which I hope is okay. But
yes,
if you watch the mainstream media, what percentage of that is, whoa, we have to get healthy. We have to get our weight down. We have to get our blood sugar down. We have to improve our nutrition. Because we have to improve our state of mind, because all those things are the real preventative things for COVID.
Yeah, how come we don't have any JFKs out there saying, hey, everybody, to deal with COVID, you should be doing 50 jumping jacks and 20 push-ups and 100 sit-ups and then get some rest.
Well, there's Robert.
That's right. I want to hear, I'm sorry, sir, you can't get on this airplane until your blood sugar comes down under 200.
Yeah. Good luck with that.
Oh, so equal opportunity among diseases, huh? If we're going to force us to have to deal with COVID as the catch-all, we should add a few other diseases, huh?
Yes, and there's never been a day where the COVID deaths exceeded the number of deaths from chronic degenerative diseases like high blood pressure, diabetes, metabolic syndrome, and so on.
We have a couple callers. Is it possible you could hold on for another segment?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, good. We have to go to a commercial break right now. This is the Dr. and Mrs. Future Show with Bobby Wilder in San Francisco and Dr. Michael Arnold on the line. And we'll be continuing our conversation on beyond COVID.
Yeah. Really. Making the best of our common sense in a crazy time. We'll be right back.
You're right. Welcome back to the show. We're talking to Dr. Michael Arnold about COVID. He's put together a very interesting document on preventative and treatment of COVID without necessarily going to the vaccine.
Yeah. I have a question for you before we
take a
bring
call.
On some other people. There's a lot of cognitive dissonance and fear and people kind of seeing the fear that is being promoted on the media through their own personal lens. And I just want to ask the question, since you've done so much research, have there been studies that indicate whether or not there is actual scientific evidence that people without symptoms are spreading the disease? And do you have any information about
asymptomatic
that?
Patients?
Asymptomatic spread.
Yeah.
Well, first I would say that unfortunately I have come to profoundly mistrust the scientific literature.
Secondly,
in the course of any viral illness, especially a respiratory viral illness, there's usually a phase where you're infectious and you don't have any symptoms, because the symptoms are really your immune system responding, and it takes, 5 days or 7 days to ramp up. Now, that being said about the mistrusting the literature, what I've read is that there are, we're getting into the whole area of, well, how would you know if somebody had COVID? And the fact of the matter is, I don't trust the test. And the science of why the PCR test is not really valid is another long discussion.
Yeah, I mean, it seems kind of weird that everything is dependent on a test that is questionable.
Exactly. So my short answer is, I don't know, because there's no real statistics in my world. And when you see those numbers, they have the little counters, you know, going up and up, how many people died. None of that is reliable in my world. Just to give you a mini example, when I was really diving into it, NPR would give these numbers at the beginning of their news show all the time. And then I saw a little story on NPR of how we get these numbers. And some 17-year-old high school kid in Washington State made a web crawler that would gather all the numbers. And he would gather them from China, the People's Republic of China. Well, I'm not going to accept a number from the People's Republic of China. They're going to say whatever they think is going to serve their political purposes. It's like NPR was just swallowing the thing whole. So there's no numbers. We don't really know how many people died from COVID. We don't really know how many cases there are. We don't really know how prevalent the idea of asymptomatic spread is. And it's kind of like, oh, you're on a boat, you're in the ocean, you can hear that there's crashing waves on a reef, and you're in the fog, and you're like, well, what the heck, where do I go? I'm landing on a stance that if you're healthy, this isn't a problem. And if you're concerned that the potential benefits of the experimental vaccines are far smaller than the risks, and if you are concerned to have the ivermectin protocol supplies in place at home and know how to use them. And that's the focus of the little manual that I wrote. You know, so, what to have at home.
Gotcha.
You have ivermectin. There's a huge literature that shows that that's helpful for COVID.
Mm-hmm.
You have these supplements we talked about earlier. And you have certain things that would tell you when to hit the panic button and dial 911 and get down to the ER. Then you find a doctor who's not in the mainstream narrative. And that's a little bit difficult. It's kind of like looking for a Catholic priest to help you with your magic ceremony or something.
Well, yes. So far, there's you and there's Dr. Tom Urema here in Santa Cruz who believe the ivermectin protocol is a good alternative. And we have links to your protocol on our links page, drfutureshow.com/links.
Good. And,
yes.
And it's free, folks. So,
it's free,
you know,
right.
I'll echo what Dr. Pierre Corey said, which is don't take my word for it. Go do your own investigation, but trust your inner compass to know I would not believe a thing on the mainstream media. There really is just trying to instill enough fear that you obey. Mm. And from my point of view, watching the mainstream television is like drinking in poison with your eyes and ears. So That's
very sad. Really sad.
All right. We've had a caller who's been waiting for a little while to ask
yes.
you a question.
Okay, let's take our caller.
All right.
Yeah.
So, Dick from Santa Cruz, do you have a question for Dr. Arnold?
Yeah, I had a few. I have to comment. He's an amazing person. I'm glad you got him on. And so much information. And he's probably been canceled by mainstream media by now or in some other professional aspects, he's probably been canceled.
Luckily, he's retired.
Yeah, so he's not so worried about it.
You can still get canceled.
Yeah, that's true. There are many forms of canceling.
Yeah, they can come to your house and key your car or something. Hey, first of all, this messenger RNA, the experimental vaccine. Now, the Johnson & Johnson, I guess, is old school.
Yeah.
So if you were going to take a vaccine, would you take that one?
So when you say the Johnson & Johnson is old school, do you mean that they actually take the coronavirus and they either kill it and grind it up and put it into you, or they create a strain that's so weak it can't hurt you and put it into you? Is that old school?
Yes.
So it's an inoculant. It's a real vaccine inoculation as opposed to a whole new experimental kind of mRNA.
Yeah, your immune system gets the taste of the whole virus instead of just the spike protein as the mRNAs.
Okay, well, I would never, if I had a choice, and I do feel we have a choice, take a vaccine that had not undergone full safety testing. But if I had to take a vaccine, I would definitely choose an old school vaccine over an mRNA vaccine.
Yeah, I thought you would say that. I don't know if you're aware that CDC just came out and said 1 out of 10,000 people get COVID transferred by surfaces. Now, that sounds real political to me. They want you to wear your mask. That's the first thing I thought of when they came out with that today.
Yeah, wash your hands
because,
too, right?
was just it. The report, like at the beginning of this whole thing, I read from the ER doctor summary that surfaces were very important, and to wash your hands. And in the hospitals, the doctors say, no, it's not in the air. People are getting it by picking up stuff and rubbing your nose. I thought that was just very interesting today that they came out and said one out of 10,000 is going to get it from a surface transmission. And my last question, you can comment on that anytime you want, but my last question is about Brazil variant that they're trying to scare everybody with. But it sounds pretty bizarre because there's all these mutants. There's double mutants now. I mean, the mutations are so fast. I don't know if this is a manufactured. Could that be it? And the other thing is that the Pfizer and Moderna was okay, I guess, tested just prematurely or very little with the UK and the South African, but they haven't said anything about the Brazilian. And they're having a huge outbreak right now. And I think we should stop the flights from Brazil. That's my opinion. Anyway,
yeah, appreciate your comments on that.
Thank you, Dick. That's a very interesting survey of stuff that you're studying.
Dr. Arnold?
Well, I'm glad you're following the situation. And of all that, the most pressing thing from my point of view is the whole issue of mutation and what they call immune escape, which means that the virus mutates very fast. The virus can kind of afford to try anything. So it's like they can play all the numbers on the roulette wheel because it makes so many new viruses. And the ones that don't work just die, right? And the ones that do work go on and the virus is changing. And that's true of viruses in general. That's why you have an influenza vaccine every year, because last year it was different. Now it mutated and now it's back.
Yeah, in the computer world, we call it brute force access to passwords.
Exactly. It's a brute force way of improving yourself. I'll try everything. I'll just aim all over, and I'm bound to hit it.
Yeah.
So then we saw this really heartbreaking video by a virologist, a doctor of veterinary medicine, who either in Holland or Germany, but his career really had been in the vaccine industry. He wasn't an anti-vaxxer. He was a guy who was like in there doing the work. And he's saying, wait a minute, we're using the vaccines all wrong because there's a certain percentage of people in the population who have infection and you don't know it. And when you give them the vaccine, what you're doing is you're teaching their body to kill the current strain. And when you do that, then all the mutated strains are like, okay, well, I guess it's our job now. And then that person goes out and infects other people. So it's a misuse of vaccine. If you're going to even, you know, assuming that the vaccine worked and that the potential benefit was greater than the potential risk, which I don't agree with. But even if assuming that, you would want to use that vaccine not during the epidemic, but before the epidemic or between the epidemic.
So during is another experiment, in a sense. It could go south.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and I'm listening to these people with a lot of laboratory people, PhDs, doctors, clinicians, with a lot of knowledge and experience saying, hey, this vaccine could really blow back on us. And the fact of the matter is that the coronavirus, the famous coronavirus's greatest hits were Middle Eastern MERS, Middle Eastern Respiratory something.
Syndrome.
And SARS, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So they attempted to make mRNA vaccines against those, and it looked pretty good until they did the animal safety studies. And in the animal safety studies, they got the vaccine, and then they were just fine. Until about 2 months, 3 months later, they re-exposed them to the virus, at which time their immune system so overreacted that the animal died. That's the step of testing that has been skipped under emergency use authorization.
No animal testing?
Not on the current COVID virus vaccines.
Hmm. So the potential for an over-response on the part of a primed immune system is actually the area of harm that is the one that people need to be paying attention to as they analyze their own experimental treatment.
The cytokine storm?
Right.
Yes. Actually, the whole mechanism of the COVID severe disease is not that the virus takes over and eats you alive. The body kills off the virus pretty easily, but the immune system is so activated that it goes on to just sort of kill everything in sight and the person dies. So what they're hypothesizing based on these previous attempts at an mRNA vaccine for coronavirus is that this is only going to make the cytokine storm more likely.
All right. Yeah. Well, we got to go to a break. So hang tight, everybody. This is an absolutely wonderful conversation. Thanks for everybody's contribution.
Okay, we'll see you in a minute.
Okay.
again, welcome back to the show. We're talking to Dr. Michael Arnold about alternatives to treating COVID. Now, we have a question come in from George in Cincinnati. Oh. If you already are getting the vaccine, should you still use the vitamin C, D, quercetin, zinc, ivermectin protocol that you're talking about?
Oh, of course. This is non-doctor's son saying, why wouldn't you?
Let the doctor talk, Mrs. Fraser. Come on.
Sorry, I couldn't help it. Go ahead, Michael.
Yeah, I agree with Dr. Sun.
Non-Dr. Sun.
Okay.
My opinions are my own, and I apply them to myself.
Yeah, okay. Yes, in other words, so even if you get the vaccine, you can still consider preventative measures.
Absolutely, and we were just talking about all the mutations. It's another issue in the vaccine that usually when you give the conventional vaccines, mm-hmm. the body sees the whole virus, which is a bunch of different proteins. And a bunch of different RNAs, and it makes a balanced immune response to the different parts of the virus.
Not just the spike protein as the mRNA.
Not just, exactly. And in this one, the immune system only comes to recognize the spike protein. So all you have to do is change that one little thing, and your body doesn't see it at all.
So it's a really targeted approach. That's super targeted, like the silver bullet for specifically
It's targeted, and given the mutation rate, in my opinion, the vaccine doesn't really provide that much protection.
Mm-hmm. Well, you'll need a new vaccine next year, and you'll have to get on the subscription program.
Well, that's kind of...
Hey, the good news is there are millions of new solicited data points for how the mRNA vaccines will work, which they could never have gotten through voluntary open clinical trials.
True.
All right. The board is just lit up with people who want to ask you questions.
Yeah, we're only 10 minutes left, so let's get rolling on our callers. Yeah.
Gosh, where to begin? Okay, first we have Colonel Terry, and I'm going to limit everybody to 1 minute because we want to get everybody in. So, okay. Hi, Colonel Terry. Welcome to the show.
Hi, smart lady. Look, my 1 minute is very brief. I took biology from a very excellent New England high school. More importantly, I know the rules of evidence, both in federal law and in logic. And respecting authority, informed, proven authority, like Dr. Fauci, certainly has merit. And is your guest saying that Fauci has no credibility? If so, I'd like to have him explain that. And next, we have a serious problem has killed 500,000 Americans, that has put thousands of people into hospitals, into breathing tubes, and more importantly, the evidence shows the virus looks like this. The virus has its prongs, it extends its little prongs, and it gets into human cells, and it is rendering people necessary to be on ventilators by the tens of millions worldwide. Those are evidence and facts. Why is that not something we should try the vaccinations and the restrictions on?
Okay, there you go. Dr. Arnold, your response?
I fully support your research into the issue, and I fully support any decision you make.
Okay.
And yes, and I feel everyone should be diligent, look into the matter, and have the freedom to make their own decision.
All right. All right, Colonel Terry, I have to keep going to some other folks because we've got the boards lit up. So let's go to Mike in Santa Cruz. Hi, Mike in Santa Cruz. Welcome to the show. You have a question for our guest?
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call. Great show, everybody. Thank you so much. It takes courage to come out like this.
Thanks.
What are the possible long-term consequences of the mRNA treatment? It is not a vaccine. And thank you very much.
Hmm.
Okay.
I'd like to say you're just getting my opinion.
Yeah.
As a medical doctor and as someone who's looked deeply into it, I'm not standing up waving a flag saying, I know the truth and you don't. Okay? This is my opinion.
Okay, so what do you think? Long-term mRNA effects?
Once I started looking into how mRNA works in the body, the fact of the matter is this has never been done on humans, and we have no idea. I did take a very careful look at the Pfizer study, which justified the release of the Pfizer mRNA vaccine, and their trial period was 2 weeks. After 2 weeks, they said, gee, it works, and so they offered all the placebo group the real vaccine. So we don't know what's going to happen at 3 months, which was when the experimental animals started to die.
Hey, they
what's
going
to happen?
I see.
Pardon me?
So essentially, the American public are the clinical trials.
Yeah.
Exactly. We're the mice and the ferrets.
Okay.
Guinea pigs.
I just wanted to say something.
You go know, ahead,
what really, frightens me is, again, if you go back to SARS-CoV-1, which is in 2002, 2003, that the animals that died, they came from something called pathogenic priming, which is antibody-dependent enhancement. So what it is we could be primed for another variant that could wipe us out completely. That's what I worry about.
That's the worst case scenario.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the worst case.
We still have more questions, and thank you. Everybody here, this is a talk show, and we are really doing our best to compare our best insights with each other, with our esteemed
trying to figure this out
expert. Right. And let's talk. Let's get a question here from Mary in Santa Cruz. Hi, Mary in Santa Cruz. You have a question for our guest, Dr. Arnold.
Hi. Yeah. Hi, Dr. Arnold. Actually, one of the discussion points you were talking about earlier was how widespread is the COVID. And I specifically remember in April of 2020, there was a study that Stanford did in Santa Clara County, which they estimated between 2.5% and 4% of the people may have antibodies. And then their conclusion was that represents 50 to 85 times more than the number of confirmed cases. And this was a study done almost exactly a year ago, showing that there was widespread antibodies that they estimated in Santa Clara County, 48,000 to 81,000 people had already been infected. And this was early April of 2020. So they were looking for antibodies. They weren't doing the PCR. They weren't doing some, which is highly unreliable. So that indicates that this is way more people already have antibodies to it, which was against the established agenda was, we don't have herd immunity. We have to have, herd immunity, which of course is Florida and Sweden, that it doesn't have to be 70-80%. They're talking about between 15-20%, which is a huge difference for what they're called immunity.
Okay. Did you want to comment on that, Michael?
Thank you, Mary. Again, we don't really know. And there's different levels of the not knowing. One is, did they test for antibodies that were very specific to the current coronavirus, or was there cross-reactivity with other coronaviruses? Because, as I said, coronavirus is a very common cause of the common cold, right? Secondly, could you even trust the article? Who paid for it, and who did it, and what was their potential benefits from arriving at a certain answer? The medical literature is no longer objective, in my opinion. Basically, that point of view is my point of view. If you want to get more into that, I would go to the Great Barrington Petition, which says, hey, this is not a threat to people who are healthy. Let's just all go out and let it spread, and we'll shelter the people who are at risk. And they want to get a vaccination, let that be their choice, not we're going to mandate, and you can't go to the grocery store unless you do. But you can choose, just like you can choose to smoke or not smoke. Or drink or not drink, this kind of thing. So that's my point of view.
Yeah. Good.
All right. Thank you so much. All right. We've got about 3 minutes left here, and we've talked to everybody on the phone. Thank you again, Mary, for your bringing in the information about those statistics on the antibodies.
So
where to go here?
Yeah, we only got a couple of minutes left. So for the takeaway here, Dr. Arnold, what would you see the most important salient things we should remember?
There are other ways to treat COVID besides getting an experimental vaccine, which may or may not work and may or may not make you sick or kill you.
Okay, and these others you have outlined in your protocol.
Yes, my protocol emphasizes ivermectin, which is a safe medicine that is already FDA approved. It's already gone through safety trial.
But used for different purposes, right?
Yes, it's what they call repurposing of an approved medication, which is a common practice. Mm-hmm. So it's an antiparasitic.
To an antiviral.
And there's a good literature to support it for COVID. Mm-hmm. So that's what that manual emphasizes, and also how to know when you're sick enough to go down to the emergency room, and how to know that you're not that sick, stay home and do healing on yourself. And all the other areas of alternative medicine, the vitamin C, the nutrition, the homeopathy, the Chinese herbs, the Ayurveda, they're all avenues by which you could potentially improve the course of a COVID infection. And I haven't really gone into that in the manual.
Yeah.
All right, good. Everybody, let's keep in touch about this subject. Everybody, do your best to stay healthy, keep everyone around you healthy, and explore all of your alternatives when you do feel sick.
So thank you. Thank you, Dr. Arnold. Appreciate your time and attention.
Thank you so much.
And COVID Preparedness Manual on our links page.